It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deegan. On the show this week, launches galore. We look at the raft of new BBC radio stations, a major US sports tie-up, and the first look at the new Freely TV service. Are we moving further away from separate subscriptions? Also on the programme, Global grabs more talent from the Beeb, and another UK name announces a whole new podcast network. All that, plus no mentions of redundancies, for once. And in the media quiz, we quiz our panellists on the biggest interviews of the week. That's all coming up in this edition of the Media Podcast. In the news this week, Audio UK has launched a manifesto for the year ahead, calling on political parties to offer tax incentives to the audio sector to drive investment and a global IP fund for podcast formats. There's also a push to open BBC Radio up to 100% competition in non-news programming. RTE's end-of-year accounts make for interesting reading. The Irish broadcaster's invested in a live musical adaptation of its popular Late Late Show feature. This is Toy Show the Musical. It lost €2.2 million in the process. Ouch. And media favourite Alan Partridge is to return to our screens in a travelogue format after a year working in Saudi Arabia. The show is titled And Did Those Feet with Alan Partridge. Now joining me in the London podcast studios, we welcome back the Senior Director of Strategy at Edelman UK. It's Karen Robinson.
Hello.
Long time no see. What's been keeping you busy?
What's been keeping me busy? Well, I work helping companies figure out what to say about things. And since there's a lot of things going on in the world right now, it's particularly helpful to have some kind of strategy behind it. So yeah, that's basically it. And some workshops. We also do some workshops.
What sort of workshops?
Oh, brand strategy, corporate positioning, all kinds of fun stuff like that.
What are companies worried about at the moment, or what sort of new things they have to deal with? What's on their mind?
Well, I mean, to get serious about it, I've just done a presentation on this. Basically, geopolitical threat. There's massive instability. Businesses are really struggling to make any decisions or decide how to move forward, considering the instability that's coming up. We've got elections happening in half the world this year, which means it's hard to plan. AI, they're figuring out what to do about that. Tensions with workers, all kinds of stuff going on. So plenty to talk about.
There is, and there will be today. And next to Karen, sort of virtually, sort of in person, yes. Next to Karen, we have the head of Radio TechCon and person who does other things as well, and Charles. How was TechCon?
TechCon went very well. We had more people coming than we did last year, which is always like how you want to go. And loads of people who came for the first time, which was brilliant.
Even better.
And we should be releasing the video from some of the sessions at some point in the next few months. So radiotechcon.com to sign up for updates for those.
Keep an eye on the website. And what else has been keeping you busy?
Yeah. So in my other not running radio industry events thing, I am spending a lot of my time focusing on object-based media and helping to get radio, TV, film, podcast industries ready for this new way of how we're going to make and consume content. So it's genuinely a bigger revolution than the move from analog to digital. So I'm doing a lot of stuff to help producers get ready and start thinking about how to make programs in an object-based way, and then talking to broadcasters, manufacturers, producers as well, to make sure that we're getting some of the technical standards together to make it actually work.
And when producers get it, what are they excited by?
I think the creative opportunities to do things that they've not done before, and also the time saving that they can have with some of the routine things that they do. So if you make a podcast or a radio show, for example, you might be used to having to mix down multiple versions in order to get your trail out or your social media promo or your version for the international market that doesn't have that piece of music in. And so a lot of that routine stuff can be done more quickly But I mean, the possibility, you could honestly, please, let's do hundreds of podcasts on this because I could talk about it forever.
Well, I guess it's we're at a point now, aren't we, where all of this is much more live in people's minds. They're already creating for multiple platforms. Mm-hmm. They're already having to change their workflows or think, how should I put this together? So having some tools that allow you that scale becomes sort of more important, doesn't it?
Yeah, and also the way I'm trying to train people is to get them to make a couple of tweaks to what they're already doing so that they're ready for it. And it doesn't mean that you have to completely throw out everything you're already making and start again. It's about enhancing what you already do so that more people can enjoy it in different ways in different places.
Some people who are doing something quite new or something new to them are the good people of BBC Network Radio, who surprised many with an announcement on Wednesday of a slate of new radio stations, which the press release is quite detailed and you sort of have to read between the lines a little bit, but how I read it was they're going to launch these new stations later this year, and then they're looking for regulatory approval to launch them on DAB digital radio probably next year. So Anne, what are the stations, what have they come up with in BBC Towers?
Well, so the stations haven't got official names yet, so obviously it's left to me to name them now. So we've got Radio 1.5, mm-hmm. for people who are too old for Radio 1 but aren't ready to admit that they need to listen to Radio 2.
Okay.
As far as I'm reading between the lines on the press release, Radio 1 dancey stuff,
which sort of exists at the moment.
Which sort of exists, but more. They have got it on BBC Sounds. I think the strategy for all of these is to put them onto BBC Sounds because they can just do that and then put them onto not DAB, but DAB Plus. We can talk about why that's important in a moment. So Radio 1 dancey things. Radio 2, I don't know if it's Radio 2 Extra, Radio 2 Gold. So this is for people who are too old for Radio 2 but don't want to admit it. And then Radio 3, I don't know if it's Radio 3 Extra, Radio 3 Chilled, I think you called it Radio 3 Smooth. So, or Radio 3 to send your upper middle class baby to sleep by, I don't know, it's kind of calm music from their collection. I'm sure they'll be using a lot from their archive and they'll be saying that they're going to be using lots of distinctive music that the commercial sector wouldn't dream of playing. And I think the commercial sector is already saying, actually, no, we already are. So,
yes, the response from the commercial radio sector has been brusque, I think is the polite way of describing it. Radio Centre put out quite a punchy statement saying, do not under any circumstances do any of these things. Boom Radio, who feel that they launched to fill the gap that Radio 2 has left, are somewhat annoyed that Radio 2 has basically reappeared to reclaim that after they've made it a pretty big success.
Yeah, and then some of the stuff in the press releases and the commentary around it from the BBC have been, we're trying to go after a kind of an older and a younger audience, but CDE, whatever that is, that one, CD2E.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, well, older people who are CD2E, let me have a think, because I think the BBC did have quite a lot of radio stations that appeared to that demographic in BBC local radio that they're not doing anymore. Of course, this is a different division of the BBC, so in the unique way in which the BBC is funded, that means it's a different pot of money.
Well, just on that, Karen, it's interesting, isn't it? There's been a lot of issues with BBC local radio, and we've talked about it on the show, and that they're cutting back, and I think not for pretty good reasons. They're going to reinvest that money into local digital news. Now, how they do it, that's more of a discussion. But it's odd to be doing that one end and then network doing something else. Is this a joined up strategy?
I mean, as a strategist, I can only say it feels pretty unstrategic to me. Bear in mind, this is only an announcement, so we'll see how things roll out. But I do think there is a disconnect there in terms of, if you're getting rid of local radio stations because you think that money is better spent on digital, then why are you launching radio stations that are national that seem to duplicate work that's already being done, not only from a kind of competitiveness point of view, but also from a, like, wouldn't it be more interesting to do something that's actually adding value into the marketplace point of view. I think they'd struggle to differentiate themselves, and it feels odd to me to go out of a market where local radio, where they were kind of one of, if not the top leading players, albeit the audience was small, but I think it was high value for a public service broadcaster. It's clear they were fulfilling a remit that nobody else was fulfilling. Now it feels like they're going into a space where there are already players in the marketplace, and I'm not quite sure it's clear why that happens. I mean, it's not even like they're taking that money and investing it in kind of original digital productions, for example. It feels like serving an audience that exists. By all means, there's a large audience for terrestrial radio and digital radio, huge, and it's actually growing, which is probably why they're jumping in there. But I'm not quite sure this is the right way of going into it, especially after the cuts to local radio. So it has gone down really badly with the people that I know who work in the sector.
if we're being nice to the BBC, right, if we're thinking
let's
about
give
the BBC,
them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, it's not outrageous for them to go, radio's changing, listening's changing, a lot of commercial radio's been able to develop new services which cater for different listeners' tastes. We've been a bit stuck for a variety of reasons. We're playing catch up a bit, and this is good for licence fee payers.
Yeah, I don't think this is as big a revolution as when the first slate of DAB stations were announced,
so like
back in the day,
and
Six Music
extra,
and BBC Seven as was, and all of that. When it was this is kind of sister stations. It's fleshing out what's already there. I don't get the sense any of these is going to have live content. I think it's going to be lots of archive, some original production. I think the Radio 1 and a half stuff is going to go out. Quite a lot of those programmes are going to go out to tender to the indie sector. So I don't think it'll be, you know, it won't be free to do, but I don't think it'll be as massively expensive as kind of starting a completely brand new full production, yeah, you know, kind of mixture on a station. And making use of the archive is probably a good use of BBC value and money, because we've already paid for that as licensing
payers.
This is what
the BBC always say, and like Six Music was, when I was reading the introduction to Six Music, and that was, we'll look at the BBC archive, and like, you listen to Six Music, okay, there's a bit of archive on in the middle of the night, but it's all about, you know, new stuff and live programming, and it's very different to what was originally Radio X or Y back in the day.
Yeah, but it is at least something that felt like it was going to be a really big difference in what the BBC had been offering up until now, whereas this feels like, well, it's slightly nudging an audience 10 years one way or 10 years another that we already have. Yeah, it feels like that we're probably making a bigger deal out of this being brand new stations, whereas they're really... I was very pleased to see, or interested to see, that they are trying to go for a DAB Plus thing, though, because there has been a whole move in some parts of the BBC to kind of go, shall we just burn down the transmitters? Do we really need those? Let's focus everything onto internet streaming. And so, obviously, they are going to go to BBC Sounds first, because that's just practically makes sense. They don't have to worry about the extra hurdles they have to get through. But to focus on saying, do you know what, actually radio listening through radio platforms is still an important part of the piece is kind of reassuring.
I mean, it is funny. I'm sure Tim Davey said no more linear, both radio and telly, a little while ago. And that's when he announced that he was going to shut down Radio 4 Extra. I mean, Karen, if you're a commercial competitor, obviously you're annoyed about this straight away, because any competition is bad. You would see that. You'd rather it didn't exist. Should they just put their big boy pants on, though, and get on with it?
Well, I mean, what else are they going to do, right? You know, there is no alternative. They're operating in a marketplace. I think, you know, the BBC ultimately has a strong enough brand and a strong enough ability to influence the markets that I'm sure they can make a success of it in competing against the private broadcasters. But there's a big enough audience there that I don't think the private broadcasters need to be in fear of their lives. And they've already built their own audiences. You know, there's been a lot of growth in these radio stations. They've done a great job of building audiences in a sector that previously looked like it was on the decline. So they've done a great job building their audiences. They will continue to build their audiences. I doubt that they will find this to be an existential threat, but I understand why they're pretty PO'd about it.
I thought also, when I looked at it, and I know that I spoke to some people there, and they had spoken to Radio Centre before the announcement, so it wouldn't have come entirely out of the blue. It seems very sort of ready, oven baked and ready to go, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of room for discussion. Yes, there is a public interest test with Ofcom over the DAB broadcast side of things, but the existence of these radio stations is, you know, from the BBC's perspective, is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Again, if I was thinking about strategically introducing these into the country, I'd maybe think about really talking about their differences, and I'm not entirely sure, say, the new Radio 1 spin-off sounds amazingly different. It sounds like a kind of history version of Radio 1. Radio 3, I think, is quite interesting. That as a spin-off, Radio 3 probably could do with a new route for people to come in, and I'm a bit more maybe supportive of that. But yeah, I think there are some things they've done with this that I think will come and bite them on the bottom.
Perhaps. But I also wonder how much stuff they've got from Sounds data.
Yeah.
Now they've forced everyone to go into Sounds. Let's do a classical music spin-off, because Radio 3 is there for influence, not for numbers. And so I wonder if some of their classical music, Sleeping Fork, all of that stuff, if that's been doing really well and someone's gone, maybe that's the thing to do.
But it's really interesting to me, though, because as a kind of gentle classical music listener, Classic FM already exists, Scala already exists. So there's not only a market leader, but also a challenger kind of in that kind of cognitive space. So I'm not sure there's a huge amount of room for them to open up. They've got Radio 3. It's where are they going to enter? I'm not quite sure I see what the differentiation is, but it's only an announcement. Let's see what happens.
Well, we will see what they've got planned. I have asked for someone important to come on the show, so we'll see if that happens in the coming weeks.
More important than us.
Even more important than all of us.
Someone important.
Okay, moving on. This week also saw the first look at Freely, the UK broadcaster's attempt to bring all PSBs under one free-to-stream service. Karen, this was unveiled at the Outside the Box conference on Tuesday. It's set to launch in the summer. What are their hopes for Freely?
Well, I think the intention would be, and I think it's a really interesting product in that what's been happening more and more is that kind of people are splitting their viewing. They're basically reinvented television, right? They've invented terrestrial TV again because people had split their viewership over so many streaming platforms that they were struggling to discover what content they might want to consume on the platforms that they already own. So Freely consolidates together the free-to-air television programs that are happening across everything from terrestrial to the places like iPlayer. And I think it's actually genuinely solving a problem that consumers have. And I think anytime you're actually solving a problem, you should assume that, you know, you've got every good chance of success. So I think it's really interesting. And I think for me, it feels like a signal of the fact that the streaming era has gone a bit mad and people are starting to withdraw from it, starting to retract and streamline. We've seen this tendency for people to now start to go, okay, I don't need Amazon and Netflix and Disney and Apple TV, so I'm going to pick and choose. Freely gives them a one-stop shop for everything that's kind of advertiser-supported or free to air. So seems like a strong proposition. Let's see if they can make it work.
So this is coming from the people who are now behind Freeview and Freesat. And so sort of if you want to watch live TV or catch up, you've got Freeview through terrestrial DTT, you've got Freesat via satellite, and sort of now you've got Freely through IP. And I guess if you've got like a cheapo Hisense TV that's connected to your Wi-Fi or it's plugged into your network, suddenly you can get like an EPG-like experience. That's right, isn't it, Anne?
That's part of what they're saying they're going to offer, that a better menu and a way of finding the programs. I was also a bit confused by this because it seems kind of obvious, and then it's like reading through the press release, I was like, well, what is different? Oh, okay, so it's Freeview but for online, or it's Radio Player for TV. Is it not Project Kangaroo for the internet? I mean, it's kind of,
yes. I mean, the crazy thing is this is basically Project Kangaroo. Off of the past, if anybody can remember this. This was before Netflix. All of the broadcasters had a very good idea, which is why don't we put all of our stuff together for the internet? And the Competition Commission went, no, which actually would have probably meant the UK would have been the world leader in all of this stuff. So they're getting around to it sort of 15 years later.
I wonder, that is it explained on air that you have to press the Freely button, or is it just there and then you're going in? How does that work with the brand for ITVX and iPlayer and Channel 4? Is it just that we don't care about it because we're going through our Freely thing? Why is it not saying it's, yeah, I'm sure they'll work it all out. I know they are recruiting some more staff at the moment, so they're clearly gearing up to sort of do some stuff.
I mean, Karen, when I looked at it, I was like, does this just drop you into iPlayer or ITVX, or does it sort of exist in its own thing? And it seems to be perhaps a bit of a hybrid.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a hybrid. I think the user experience is going to be everything in terms of how this lives or dies. You know, I've got a kind of similar app on my TV at the moment, which is an LG content thing, and you can navigate around. It will point you to where it's happening. But the user experience is really clunky. It's hard to get in. It takes ages. Sometimes it drops you in. Then you've got to enter the password. So I think it is about getting that seamless. The promise that they're making is seamless navigation of the content that's available to you. And that's all to play for in terms of how they actually deliver it. So it probably not yet ready for prime time in terms of the user interface, but they can adapt that in an agile way as they go, see, and use that user data to start to improve and optimize.
I was thinking about Radio Player, which is sort of a radio version of this. It's been around for a long time. This is all the radio groups put their streams together, both for apps and for TV apps, but also as a web player. The BBC actually has pulled out of Radio Player quite a bit in the last few years. It's not in the app natively anymore. They don't use the pop-ups. And in the discussions that, you know, I've had people talk to me about with BBC Distribution are quite tough with any of their stuff have been quite tough with any of the stuff appearing elsewhere, particularly in radio and podcasts. Whereas this, they seem to be like, oh, no, it's fine. Chuck everything in. Is it one rule for one rule for the other?
It is a bit confusing, isn't it? I mean, the BBC hasn't pulled out a radio player completely. They still part own it. And I suppose being in there for the car dashboard is really what they're looking for. So it's a similar problem that you're trying to deal with cars and how many buttons do you have and how do you persuade, you know, Ford or Audi or whatever to put your random local radio station in. You need to go as an industry and go, we're ready to go. I mean, it's very unlike the BBC, isn't it, to have different people in different parts of it making different decisions and not talking to each other about the overall strategy. That's never happened before, Matt, what you're talking about. They've obviously identified a problem here and gone in and gone, okay, it's worth putting a punt and putting some money into this. And it makes sense. It just seems a bit confusing that it hasn't happened already.
I think there's a real confluence of issues at the moment. So you've got like BBC Network Radio, BBC Local Radio, sort of unaligned, and we talked about before. You've got broadcast distribution, both broadcast radio, linear radio, and internet television, and how that fits in with broadcast television, all confused as well. Slightly different rules for each. No overarching view that's been communicated. And especially, as you know, as I said before, Tim Davey was saying, you know, we're not about linear anymore. You know, we're about IP and on demand. And that sort of is in here a little bit, but I think we could do with a bit of a refresh.
But also the strategy and what you need for television and visual services is necessarily different. And I think there's also just the natural ebb and flow, isn't there, of how businesses operate. It's always a wheel, isn't it? You kind of 10 years later, you're coming back to, oh, let's do Project Kangaroo, or let's have everyone on their own app so we've got the data versus shall we share some infrastructure. So those kind of trends always go backwards and forwards like a pendulum in any business.
Karen, this is a bit driven by consumers as well, isn't it? How consumers are using these devices, broadcasters and all content providers having to kind of catch up with how this stuff's being viewed and used.
I think that's exactly right. I think one of the reasons maybe you haven't seen this happen sooner is perhaps because the partners that you would want for a service like this were all desperate to drive people to their own apps. I think they'd still like to drive people to their own apps in a perfect world so that they own that relationship. But I think you're starting to see a lot more consumer pushback. As I say, people are streamlining their choices. They're navigating in different ways. They're a little bit fed up with the confusing morass that television viewing has become. So I think the channels are probably starting to understand that actually it's in their own interest to make it easy and pleasant for their viewers to watch their shows.
Well, it's not just UK rivals joining forces, because across the Atlantic, three major sports broadcasters will launch a similar service for fans. Karen, it's quite a big deal, isn't it? Warner Brothers Discovery, ESPN and Fox Sports all going to work together. What problem are they trying to solve?
Similar type of problem, as you say. There's so ESPN, it being the kind of classic heritage sports brand, old school cable channel, Warner Brothers, Fox, each of them have different licensing deals with different leagues. So the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, even FIFA, which I kind of love to see FIFA becoming more and more popular in the US. People are struggling to figure out how to navigate it. And just as we said before, getting a little bit fed up with having to subscribe to multiple different packages to follow their favorite teams. And I think there's a real understanding that kind of avid sports fans are such a big opportunity. Loyal viewers, they're very eager viewers. The advertisers love to advertise to sports fans. It offers those live TV moments that are becoming kind of more rare, gather around the sofa type of moment. So it's a really appealing group of people to reach. So let's see how that goes. But I think those are, you know, if you've got the NFL, the NBA, and MLB all together on one platform, that's going to be really, really compelling to the American demographic.
I mean, often sports rights are a big driver of subscriptions and take-ups.
Yeah.
It's also, isn't it, the sort of competitors working together? Does it sort of devalue the competition for sports rights if basically everyone's working together and popping up on the same app?
Yeah, potentially. I'm sure that there are some very, very carefully written contracts being drafted, because they're on that side of things, and their potential, it's hugely lucrative. I'm sure they wouldn't be doing it if they hadn't figured out a way of contracting it in a way that's going to make them scads and scads of money. But yeah, absolutely. As I was saying before, you know, previously the channels were all trying to drive people to their own proprietary apps or their own proprietary viewing platforms. If they're now saying, actually, maybe there's a way that we can come together and still make the cash, that's probably better for viewers. But it may also be a question of they have no choice, because people are being more choiceful about which stations, which networks they're willing to pay for and tune into.
Thanks both. We'll be back with more media news after this.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back. Anne and Karen are here for more media news. In brief, the Sports Agents, another new launch, this time from Global, who are rolling out a new show in the news agent stable called, as I mentioned, The Sports Agents. And the pun doesn't work, but it's a neat idea, isn't it?
Yeah, I think this is a really good booking. It makes complete sense. So Gabby Logan and Mark Chapman are being brought in to do two shows a week. As far as I can work out, it's being produced by Global as opposed to Persephonica.
Mm.
Well done me for saying that out loud. It's a hard one to say. And I think this is a really interesting one because obviously it's going to be a really big year for sport. We've got the Olympics. I think there's the Euros. There's Wimbledon, as you always get, all of that kind of stuff. And Global doesn't go as large on sport stuff as some of their competitors. So the BBC has Five Live, Five Live Sports Extra, all of the television coverage. News UK has got Talk Sport and Talk Sport 2. And so they do have some sports coverage as part of their news overall coverage, but having a bit of a sports focus, it makes complete sense. You can cross promote to your other audiences. And Global seems to have done quite well about using the talent they have brought in for the news agents across their network as well. And actually, you know, because they're a relatively small newsroom, and saying, hey, we have actually got these high profile
experts. You see John Soapel pop up, don't you, on things?
Yeah.
And Emily Maitlis as well.
And so depending on the deal that they've struck with these two, it kind of makes sense that they then have a bit more access to in-house expertise as well to do a bit of cross promotion. So it makes complete sense. I think it will do really well in the charts in the UK.
As Anne mentioned, Gabby Logan and Mark Chapman are presenting it. Karen, do you think Global have just got an eye on what Goalhanger have been doing with The Rest Is, and are thinking, we'll have a bit of that?
I was literally just going to say, I really love this trend of this mini trend of people creating sort of podcast brand families. I think it's really smart. It kind of serves as a quality marker. So if you look at The Rest Is Entertainment, The Rest Is Politics, The Rest Is History, I think it's done a really nice job of elevating podcasts that might not have ever been finding the same audiences, and actually kind of packaging them together with a sort of badge of quality, trusted content, etc. So I think it's really smart. I would expect they'll probably wind up doing more in this vein, although, like you were saying at the beginning, I'm not quite sure the naming convention stretches as far as The Rest Is naming convention does. But I would expect, if anything, we'll see more of this. For me, it kind of feels like it's part of the bigger trend of people, you know, no longer have kind of big media brands necessarily that they follow loyally as they used to follow a newspaper, for example, where they would read whatever content that newspaper puts out. I don't think Global would be able to put out Global brings you XYZ, but if they create that kind of cognitive connection that people have between podcast families, I think that's probably a new way of kind of reinventing a way of creating brand connotations that's positive for them.
And Gabby and Mark, good talent, know what they're doing, experienced. Both have had podcasts. Mark Chapman did a lot with The Athletic. Gabby Logan has her own podcast, Midpoint, has done other things. Both are okay. None have been sort of superstar podcasts. Do you think they've got the chance to be a top 10 show?
Yes. I mean, I know the sports field is kind of a bit more crowded because, you know, depending on if you want something that's particular to rugby or particular to your particular sport. But I think because of the chance of cross promotion, and Global is very good at that.
I mean, they will be on billboards up and down the M1, won't they?
Yeah, exactly. And so they've got the marketing thing behind them and the fact that they are experienced broadcasters and podcasters who actually know what they're talking about. So long as the chemistry between them is right, then I think they do have the opportunity to do quite well. And I suppose, well, podcasting a bit like whenever the radios come out with radio, it's quite easy to say you're the top 10 of something, isn't it? Because you can always find a category.
Well, someone who's hoping to be in the top 10 and who has been there a bit, but is trying to do more, is Elizabeth Day, who's launched a new podcast network. She obviously has her own successful podcast called How to Fail, which moved to Sony a little while ago. And it's been around a few different networks. Why do you think she's launching her own network?
Well, this is an interesting time to do it. So she says that she's launching it because there's a complete lack of diversity, especially in the UK podcast market, that there's lots of stuff where it's, you know, two white blokes having a chat about something. And she had a nice phrase around two men who failed at politics having a commentary on why it failed, even though they had nothing to do with that bit, not working, all of that kind of stuff. There isn't a huge amount more detail. So she's done an article in The Times. There is a website which just kind of mentions the podcast she already has. And obviously in the last few weeks, we've had Broccoli and Boom Shakalaka, both of whom who are concentrating on trying to champion diverse creators, diverse voices being supported and brought into the podcast world, not able to continue. So I think everything she's saying about what she intends to do is really good. She's obviously got the background and the contacts to be able to do it well, but it's a tough market.
And the proof's going to be, I mean, it's diversity is big underlined section on her website at the moment. Obviously, it's news. There's not a lot of examples of what that might be, but some more work we'll need to see, I guess.
Yeah, as I say, it's been a really tricky year for people who have been doing that. And so all to the good. But I wonder what she'll be able to bring that will be a financial success for her as well. We'll wait to see or to listen.
Karen, obviously podcasting's had a few bumps in the last 12 months, particularly around money. Is now a good time to launch a podcast business?
Well, I guess we'll find out. She'll succeed and we'll say, well, it was an excellent time to start a podcast business, wasn't it? Or otherwise. I kind of tend to think it probably is a good time to start it, because I think a lot of the bubble has burst and actually there's room now for real kind of thoughtful quality. And I think her point is well taken about a lot of the podcasts that have been out there have just been two guys who happen to be mates sitting around and shooting the breeze, as opposed to actually thinking thoughtfully about who are the new audiences they might reach. I think it's really interesting, her reflection that in the US there is a little bit more diversity in the podcast market, which I think is true. And I think it's because they've been really smart about understanding they don't need to be, the whole point is not to be a mass media, it's to find your niche and really serve it well. And I don't think we've necessarily done that in kind of at least the prestige UK podcast. There's been kind of almost like a saturation of a little bit of a me too, oh, I'll jump on that. That seems to be popular these days, as opposed to going, you know, actually, is there a musical genre whose fans are not well served? Or is there a kind of hobby or sport whose fans are not well served? So I hope that that's the direction that she's going. It's not just saying, let's bring in female presenters and more diverse voices, but also let's look at the kind of parts of our world that aren't being covered that people care about and actually go in there.
Yes, all good points. Right, finally before the quiz, staying with audio, Spotify released their numbers for Q4 this week, showing a £64 million operating loss. No great surprise, Spotify, kind of home of making losses. They never seem to be that bothered by it. Why have they lost money this time, Karen?
This time they've lost money because they've bought lots and lots of books. So they used to think that podcasts were going to be the way of the future and that was going to be audio forever and that's how they were going to make their trillions. And now they think that audiobooks are the way of the future and that's how they're going to make their trillions. So they've bought the rights to 200,000 audiobooks, apparently in an intention to go to to Best Audible, which is the kind of current audiobook leader in their marketplace. And it's a pretty smart strategy, I have to say. I've been following the publishing industry really closely because I'm working on a novel and trying to find literary agents for it at the moment. So I'm kind of aware that actually publishing is growing pretty well, and actually audiobooks within publishing is one of the sectors that's growing the fastest. So it is, from that point of view, like, they're not wrong to say that's where the growth is coming. Audiobooks are a big thing, and also compared to podcasts, they have the virtue of kind of having been previously published content. So, you know, they've been vetted, they've been edited thoroughly, etc., etc. So there's a sort of quality marker there to audiobooks that come from mainstream publishers. And whereas previously it used to be the case that the publishing industry would often put a book out and then think about the audiobook, now it's very much treated as a package deal, right? They'll produce everything to a very high standard, publish the book and the audiobook at the same time. Whether or not that's going to be kind of driving Spotify's growth for the foreseeable future, I'm not so sure. I can see why they like it, not only because it's currently growing, but also because there's a lot of hours in there, right? The thing about listening to an audiobook is it's a lot of content that you're consuming, and that's a lot of advertising opportunities and so forth. So I can see why they're excited about the potential, but I kind of not sure how much more growth there is in audiobooks. I think you will at some point tap out, and everybody who wants to listen to audiobooks is listening to audiobooks.
They're probably saying, like, will it reach a different audience on Spotify? And it's also, is it them recognizing that there is no money in music? There's never been any money in music. They sort of lose money being a music provider, and they've got to make money from things like audiobooks and podcasts to keep the vessel afloat.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the music marketplace is broken, although I would say Spotify helped break it, so they're in no position to judge. So yeah, there isn't a lot of money in music for sure, except for live, which is, you know, not something that Spotify can have a lot of role to play in. I guess it's just a question of, and so audiobooks is not a bad play, and actually having a good mix of podcasts, audiobooks, you know, music is probably the way forward. I'm not sure that their growth potential is infinite.
And they haven't abandoned podcasting, though. It's still a key thing for them. They've re-signed Joe Rogan, but there's a shift from him being a platform exclusive, isn't there?
Yes, so I think they're still in control of the adverts and some revenue from that, but he can now go on to other platforms, which I guess is a win-win from his point of view, because he's already the most popular on their platform. So
yes, and I think there was a sort of, in Daniel Ek's statement, he sort of said, our job to get people to use Spotify for podcasts has gone well, and we don't need to force people to use it anymore. They're all there, so we can release all of our shows, or the most vast majority of their shows, to sort of open RSS and just make the money off the ads.
Yeah, and I guess there's also whether or not they found that the investment that they were putting into some of those, I mean, with Joe Rogan, it's slightly different because they're still paying him loads, but they have paid a lot of money to some artists and creators, and then not necessarily seen a return. And also, conversely, you've had people like Em Rossiano in Australia, who was very, very pleased to be a Spotify exclusive in Australia for a year, and then was, at the end of that, was offered a renewal and chose not to take it because actually it didn't really make so much sense for it to be just exclusive to one platform. So it's, yeah, I guess it swings and roundabouts. They're going for a share of ear, aren't they? They just want you inside one app and then being able to listen to everything,
yes.
Every genre you can possibly imagine.
And it's like, I think if you're not going to get them in Spotify, let's get them everywhere else. And if we can drag people in for audiobooks and podcast and music, then that's cool too.
It's going back to what we were saying before, isn't it? It's the convenience of being in one place for some people versus having a dedicated app for each thing for others. So it depends really on where you already loaded up your podcasts. You know, it was a pain in the whatever to go to an exclusive Spotify if you're not using Spotify for everything else.
It'd be interesting to see if Joe Rogan sort of off of open RSS for a couple of years, whether he'll kind of instantly go back to number one and stay there, or whether he has sort of lost out a bit on an audience that's developed in other places.
What, on Spotify or in general?
Well, just on when we look in the Apple charts, how well he'll do. Will he reclaim his sort of top spot, or is he going to have to work hard to regain that audience?
I mean, I think he's either way, he's doing all right, isn't he?
He's fine.
He'll be fine.
Let's not worry about Joe Rogan too much. Okay, just enough time for the media quiz. This week, entitled Head to Head. Lots of head-to-head interviews this week have been making headlines, but can you identify the participants from the news lines that I give you? Buzz in with your names if you know the answer. So Anne, you'll say...
Anne.
And Karen, you'll say...
Karen.
Right, let's play head to head. Question number one. Who made a £1,000 bet this week in the middle of an interview?
Karen.
Oh, Anne just got in there.
It was Piers Morgan and Rishi Sunak. Well, Rishi Sunak probably says that he didn't make a bet at all. He just got confused by a hand being put out.
Yeah, it's not a great week for Rishi Sunak. No. This is him on Talk TV with Piers Morgan when challenged about his Rwanda policy. Always good making £1,000 bets when talking about migrants and people less fortunate than yourself.
It was a very awkward situation all around, wasn't it?
I say what you like about Piers, though, Karen. He can certainly still make headlines, can't he?
He's very smooth operator. He knows what he's doing. And I think it's really interesting because if you listen back to that audio, as you say, the PM doesn't at any point actually accept the bet. But because Piers Morgan has his hand out, he kind of shakes it. And, you know, shaking on a bet, we recognise as being an acceptance. I think a lot of people are given pause by the idea that the PM, to be reminded that the Prime Minister is married to a billionaire and £1,000 for him is more or less like dropping the price of a cup of coffee. So I think it's probably not the kind of signalling that he wanted to put out there as we enter an election year.
Okay, question number two. Who thanked Elon Musk for making an interview possible this week? Karen, who was it?
Well, so this is the Tucker Carlson interview with Vladimir Putin. So Tucker Carlson, the former Fox News TV host, he no longer has a television program, but he's gone to Russia where he's interviewed Vladimir Putin and will apparently be broadcasting it on his X channel. So, let's see how that goes.
Yes, if you're listening now, it probably was on Thursday night. So we wonder what happened. I imagine it'll be incisive and it'll be really tough on him. I imagine that'll be what happens. Okay, question number three. Who said this at the Broadcasting Press Guild lunch on Tuesday? Let's call it a lover's tiff. We've been together a long time and these things happen. I think it was a little bit unfortunate, but we're all fine now. Anyone?
We clearly don't get invited to the right places,
Karen. this was someone talking about their relationship with the BBC, who's also in the podcasting space, likes to tweet, likes crisps.
Was it Gary Lineker?
It was Gary Lineker, Karen, talking about his relationship with the BBC. Yes, he just thinks it's a lover's tiff over BBC guidelines. Do you think he'll still be presenting Match of the Day this time next year, Anne?
Yes.
Yes, Karen?
Yes, he's very good at it.
Well done, Karen. You got 2 points there, so you win the competition. You get to discuss what the media podcast spin-offs will be in a kind of news agents, sport agents fashion. And you come back to us with your homework in the coming weeks. Thank you both. Anne, how can people keep up with what you're doing?
So I am annecharles.tv as my website, and I am at SparkyAnnC on X, but not really there very much. And I'm quite often on LinkedIn.
Excellent. Karen?
Yeah, so I'm still on Twitter, which I refuse to call X, at KarenJR, Karen with an I. And if there are any literary agents out there looking for a fantasy novel that's about an election happening in the Fairy Kingdom that mashes up political drama with ancient mythology, then give me a ring.
Lovely. Podcast rights also available. Thank you both. But wait, before you go, there's a sizable discount waiting for you, a listener to the Media Podcast. That's because the London Podcast Studios, where we record our show, is offering 25% off your first booking when you use the code MEDIAPOD. Just head to thelondonpodcaststudios.com for 25% off with MEDIAPOD. That's the code. And if you're new to the show, remember to hit follow in your podcast app of choice or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Just search for the Media Podcast with Matt Deacon. And if you have any first-hand experience of the stories we've talked about today, why not send us your comments if you are listening in Spotify? There should be a lovely little box on your screen where you can send us your missives. My name is Matt Deacon. The producers were Ollie Pitt and Matt Hill. It was a Rethink Audio production. I'll see you next week.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.